So on Saturday we were studying verse number 5, text number 5, which was, what was about, what would be one word that characterizes verse 5? What? How many words were that? I want one. Relationships, okay, that's one word. Another word? Discrimination. Yes, very good word. Discrimination. Coming to the level of Madhyama, learning how to discriminate. This is essential for spiritual progress. If we cannot discriminate, then we start taking instructions from the newcomer and we request the Gurudev to give us his shoes. I mean, our shoes for wearing. We take service from the seniors and advice from the juniors. And then what will be the future? Not so good. Oh, we have a guest? Who is this? Shubhanga? Welcome. What's your name? Mayuri. Welcome. So, discrimination. Yes. Discrimination. Another word, maybe? Etiquette. Yeah. Etiquette, and I would say something in the same line, is to honor. How to honor the devotees. How to respect and honor the devotees. So, relationship, that's true. It's talking of relationship, it's talking of discrimination, and it's talking of etiquette or respect, that value of respect. Devotees must be respected. And they must be respected according to what? Their status, their spiritual status. Right? And it's only after we advance a bit in Krishna consciousness that we begin to actually discriminating and understanding who is advanced. When we first come to Krishna consciousness, for us everybody is advanced. If we are a good boy, a good girl. Otherwise, we don't even think they are advanced. But in the beginning, we cannot distinguish. But we must learn this art of discrimination. So the word that was used there is adriyeta, which means giving respect. And this respect was to be given in three different ways according to the three statuses of the devotees. And the first way to honor a devotee was manasa, which means mentally. We mentally honor the devotee because he is a devotee. What is the proof is the devotee?
He chanting.
The name Krishna is coming out of his mouth. So when somebody chants, then that person must be honored. It's not a common person. It is someone who has started his awakening on the way back to Krishna. Someone who has been favored. Somebody who has already been favored by Krishna. Because without Krishna's favor, no one can chant his holy name. And when Krishna withdraws the favor, then no one can chant the holy name. So, and then the next one, what do we do with the next one? Pranati vihin. We offer obeisances. To whom do we offer obeisances? Those who are initiated, only initiated, and who are actively serving, who are worshipping the Lord. If someone, because initiation is not always like, it's not the only factor to determine whether somebody has advanced. Initiation we take, it's the beginning of our spiritual life. But with initiation, many times we think of it as a... What is initiation? Anybody can say? When you think of initiation, what do you think?
Officially linking with the parampara.
Okay, that's one way to see it. Officially linking with the parampara. What do you think when you think of initiation? You have read the book. So Diksha, Di and Ksha. So it gives transcendental knowledge and destroys the sins. But many people have never read this definition. What do they think initiation is about? First of all, it is a? A fashion, it could be. It's a ceremony, we think, right? It's a ceremony. We have an initiation ceremony, right? We have an initiation ceremony in the temple and everybody comes and claps. Your name is Bhakta Das. Your name is Radha Devi Dasi. So, for the neophyte, unless there is education, then initiation appears to be like so beautiful day. No, it's the day you get your name and you get your counting beads and you get your chanting beads and you get your mala and you get your tilak and your Harinam chanter, and it's a beautiful day. And sometimes in English they say initiation means it's just the beginning. So it's the beginning of spiritual life. But what we learn from this verse is that Diksha, besides, it starts at a certain point, but it's actually a process. It's a process by which one obtains transcendental knowledge and one becomes completely, the sins become destroyed, one becomes purified. So process means you have to follow. Therefore here it says, Diksha asti, if there is initiation, and cha bhajantam isham. If the person, one, is initiated, and second, if the person is actually worshipping the Lord, which indicates that he is following the process. The spiritual master, by the process of Diksha, he purifies us by giving us instructions, which are transcendental instructions, how to rise to the transcendental position. And we first rise to the platform of the mode of goodness, become a brahmana, and then can engage in this bhajantam isham, worshipping the deity. So in order to respect someone, there has to be, of course, there has to be practice. You have to see that the person is actually following, not just initiating. Of course, we said also that this doesn't mean that you stop paying obeisances to the ones who are not initiated. Amongst devotees, we can also respect. But the etiquette is that the one who is not initiated should first be eager to pay obeisances to the one who is initiated. It doesn't say here that the one who is initiated should never pay obeisances to the one who is not initiated. It is not like that. We are always eager to pay obeisances because the person is chanting and so on. So we offer obeisances, especially if we are not initiated, we offer obeisances to those who are initiated and who are following. And then there is a third type of devotees that have to be honored in a different way, or additional way we could say, because it's not that, you know, you honor the neophyte mentally and then you pay obeisances to the more advanced and forget to honor him mentally. It's not like that, okay? It is stimulative. This mentally honoring, that should be done for everyone. Whether they are neophyte, madhyama, uttama, mental honor shall be given to everyone. And then the obeisances, they are also given to the advanced devotee. So we do that. We honor mentally, physically we show our respect. But one who is more advanced, most advanced, then what do we do? How do we honor that person? Shushrushaya. Which means? We hear and serve. We should be eager to serve. And the characteristics of an advanced devotee are given in the verse, and we studied a bit more in the purport. Bhajana vigyam ananyam. He is expert in service and in sadhana. And ananyam, his mood is, what means ananya?
pure.
No, nothing else. It doesn't have any material desire, any material motivation, the pure devotee. So this third level is the pure devotee, who has no material motivations to serve Krishna. And another symptom of that person, it says Anya, Ninda, Adi, Shunya, Hridam. His heart is free from the propensity to criticize others. So this is a very important sign of a pure devotee that you see. He will not criticize anybody unless it is an official case of discipline or something. It is not criticism, it's just coming out with some facts to rectify someone. Otherwise you will not hear a pure devotee actually criticize others unless there is some very, very specific aim of preaching, of teaching, or something. But otherwise you will not unnecessarily sickly criticize. Ninda Adi. What is this Adi? He will not blaspheme the devotees, etc. No, it's Ninda Adi. Ninda Adi. Maybe he will also not speak Ninda, he will not hear also. Yes, what else it could be, this Adi? Okay, mentally. Or it could be there are different ways to offend a devotee. How do you offend a devotee? Bodily language, ignoring. Ninda usually means spoken blasphemy. But it's not just that. Slapping, kicking, beating, killing. These are all heavy duty offenses. So none of that. And also we can understand another thing from this. Where does blasphemy come from? Why do we blaspheme others? Why do we criticize others? What is the underground for that, the background?
Enviousness.
Yes. It's enviousness. So enviousness, he's free from envy. So in that sense, envy, he's free from envy, etc. Which means the other enemies as well. The six enemies of the mind. The pure devotee is free from envy, he's also free from anger, he's free from lust, he's free from greed, madness, illusion. He's free from all these things. And therefore, he doesn't criticize others. He sees things as they are. There's no illusion. He knows what's about people. And therefore, there's no need to criticize them. Everybody acts according to their own level, their capacity. It's difficult to accept sometimes how others are. But there's no need to criticize them. So this is what was explained here. We heard more about the very advanced devotee and the Kanishtha. We had the presentations. Kanishtha sees Krishna only in the temple. As soon as he leaves the temple, Krishna is gone. Goes back in material consciousness. Offends the devotees. That is the Kanishtha. And the Madhyama discriminates much more. And he's able to preach because he understands who is who. And he's also safe. The Madhyama is safe. Why is the Madhyama safe? Because he can identify who is envious and who is inimical, who is atheistic. The Kanishtha cannot. The Kanishtha Adhikari, therefore Srila Prabhupada says, one should not remain a Kanishtha. One should really endeavor hard to rise. Because from the platform of Kanishtha, one can fall very easily. Because one doesn't understand who is who. So a misassociation is very easy for a Kanishtha Adhikari. To be diverted spiritually, philosophically, or morally. It's very easy for a Kanishtha. But for a Madhyama, the Madhyama is more steady. The knowledge is higher. The knowledge of the Kanishtha is very low. His faith is called, what is the name in Sanskrit of the faith of the Kanishtha? Shraddha, yes. How is his Shraddha? Prakrita? No. There was another word used. What is the characteristic in Sanskrit of the faith of the Kanishtha? Soft and pliable. In Sanskrit it is komal. 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 It's very soft and pliable. Soft means it can be shaken. And pliable means it can be broken also, it can be like diminished, it can be changed. So therefore, you know, sometimes either even while preaching or the Kanishtha can lose his faith. He will be defeated because his knowledge is not enough. And if he is defeated, he may lose his faith. But the Madhyama has a better knowledge. Usually he will not be defeated. And even if he is defeated, his faith is strong. Dhrada. It is called Dhrada Vishwas. There is Komal Shraddha or Komal Vishwas and Dhrada. Very, very strong faith is there in the Madhyamadikari. He cannot be deviated like that. And it's difficult to pull him down. So, and then we saw the Uttama Adhikari. We are going to hear more today about the Uttama Adhikari, very advanced divinity. But one thing, what is one thing that we heard about the Uttama Adhikari? Yeah, the topmost Uttama Adhikari, he actually knows his Swarup. Is that what you said? No? What did you say, Vladimir? Internal eyes are open. Yes. He understands his relationship with Krishna. And it's not a question of understanding, actually. What was the word that was used in the purport? Swarupa. And how did he come to know about his Swarupa? It was revealed. It was revealed. What does it mean, it was revealed? You know, something happened internally. As Vladimir says, his eyes opened. This is called vijnanam. Vijnan. Transcendental knowledge, realized knowledge. He realized there was a connection with the transcendental realm that was made. And the communication was established. Communication was established. This is what we are trying to do every day when we chant japa. We are calling Radha Krishna. Hey Radhe, Radha Devi, Ke Chalani Te. We are calling. Yeah. Hey Krishna, Nanda Tanuja. We are calling, 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 and no answer. At least it seems. So Uttama Adhikari means he got the reply. Yes, yes, I'm here. And so he is in contact with the internal potency which becomes bestowed upon him by the Supreme Lord. Then he can perceive his own Swarup. He can perceive the Lord. And he as soon as we see the Lord, we understand the relationship with the Lord. And he's cultivating that relationship internally through hearing, chanting, hearing, meditating. And how do we recognize such person? Can we recognize such person? Very difficult. Why? It says you have to be an Uttama to recognize another one. Why is it difficult to recognize an Uttama Adhikari? He is internally cultivating, outwardly is not showing. He's not explaining that I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I am a peacock. during Prabhupada's time, there was one devotee who used to lock himself in one room in America, and then the devotees were hearing strange sounds coming from the room, like and they were thinking, what's happening with him? Then they understood that somehow he thought he was a peacock in Krishna's pastime, so he was practicing. Not like this. We do not practice our transcendental service through the material senses. We do that through deity worship. But at this level of Uttamadhikari, the practice is totally internalized. And we said that these revelations that we get of our relationship with Krishna are so personal, so intimate, and so secret, so precious, that no one will tell. Just as, what was the example given? Just as the relationship between husband and wife is based on secrecy. It is not for public knowledge. So similarly, the pure devotee has his own secrets with the Lord, and it is not for public knowledge. But there is something, one symptom that we can observe. Of course, already in the beginning of the book we heard, as we say, this Pacho Vegam Manasa Pronavegam, he can control all the urges. So somebody who can control all the urges, we should understand he has a good connection inside. How much connection we don't know, but he has a good connection. And what is another sign of an Uttamadhikari? Yes, his influence is very strong. Very, very strong. When he speaks from the platform of realization. He doesn't speak to the mind of the people. He doesn't even speak to their intelligence. He speaks to the soul. And the souls pick it up. And they feel so enlivened that they transform themselves. So he is able to transform many people, turn them into Vaishnavas of good quality. So this is how to see. And he is very, there it said that his heart is free from everything. It's free, we heard, from envy, greed, lust, and so on. Doesn't want anything material. He is what is called akinchana, one who is poor. What is akinchana? One who is poor. He's poor means he has nothing. But spiritually it means he wants nothing. He doesn't hanker for anything material. He's finished with the material world. He doesn't have any aspiration to become anybody in this world. Usually everyone wants to become somebody. Big or small. Do we want to become somebody? We want to make sure that we leave our imprint in this world, which is not going to last anyway. But the Uttamadhikari is not interested. Where is his future? Where is his ambition? Where is his mind? In the spiritual world. Nothing more to do here. Finished. Packing, done. Already on the way. So this is... And he's always preaching, because he's... Why does he preach? What is his reason for preaching? Maybe he has gotten the instruction to do it, yes? Or? What's another reason? He wants to please Krishna. Krishna wants, it is said in Nectar of Devotion, it is the level of Sakyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, the Angas of Bhakti. The pure devotee preacher, he practices Sakyam. And you will see in Nectar of Devotion what Sakyam means. Sakyam means to be such a friend with the Lord that you know what he wants. And you satisfy his desire. That is Sakyam. So the preacher, if he knows exactly what Krishna wants, Krishna wants to reclaim all the conditions. So he does that one. And in his heart he has great compassion. So let us hear. We had one more group to hear. Yes? How do we progress from the beginning of spiritual life to higher levels of Krishna conscious development? Yes, Madhusudan Govinda. Yes?
One is the project of the Dhamma Association. Freedom is the first institution. All sins can be
All sins? Yes, I mean, what we understand is at that time we come under the protection of the spiritual master. So we will be protected from our sins. It is said that before we take initiation, no, our account is with Durga. Durga Devi. The material nature. Tit for tat. Anything you do, you get the reaction. Tit for tat, in English they say. Tit for tat. You can't say, oh, well, I was young, I didn't know, excuse me. Ping. What did you say? Excuse me? Ping. Don't talk. Only rectification. Only you get 100% all the reactions for the sinful activities and the pious activities. So when we take initiation, our account changes from being under Durga to being under the Supreme Lord. Now we belong. What did Krishna say? I consider him to be my own. So we are Krishna's property. And it is not that the karma is completely destroyed, but it is said that the devotee only suffers a shadow of his karma, which is managed by Krishna to teach lessons. If Krishna would remove altogether in 1 second all the karma which he can do, we would fall dead immediately. Because our body and our future in this life is made of karma. How the body walks and talks and all, it is made of karmas. So if Krishna removes all the karmas at once, we drop dead. So therefore, the karma is in one sense still there, but it is only a shadow of that karma. And it is not managed by Durga, it is managed by Krishna. And as we know, sometimes we are supposed to get 100% hurt, and by Krishna's grace, we only get 80%, 60%, 20%, a small token reaction we get. So we are protected in that way. So yes, at the time of initiation, all the karmas actually are removed. But remember, initiation is not just one day. Depending on the strictness of our practice, this will apply more or less. If we are very, very surrendered to the spiritual master and very, very much practicing, then the shadow will be very... It's a shadow that we will get a shadow of. We will be protected from our previous sins. But if we do not follow properly, if we do not chant properly, if we do not follow the instructions that are given in Upadeshamrita by the spiritual master, then that protection will not be there. Or will be less there. There will always be some protection. But it is to the degree of our surrender to the process. So that has to be understood. Not that after initiation I'm free from sin, now I can do any damn thing. It is not that. We have to follow. Otherwise the karmas will again catch up. Prabhupada says it's like the fan, you know. You switch it off. It's still turning. And if you practice nicely, then slowly, slowly it will stop. But if you don't practice it, then it will keep turning, turning, turning. It may be a little slow, but... And if Krishna sees that this one is really not in the right mood, then he will again increase the speed of the fan. And then we'll go spinning. Here, there. One more visit to the material world. Who wants to go? You have seen already all the disastrous effects of material life. But if we are not serious with our sadhana, then Krishna may say, okay, let's increase the intensity a little bit. Huh? And then we fall under the material energy. Ah, very dangerous. Yes, we are ready. How to progress?
From guest to the best.
Means first
class. So we try to pass the definition of this purpose, that's fine. We divide it into four.
Maybe speak a little louder.
Into four categories. Just to give some idea. What we thought would be the best advice from the purpose, how to advance within each of these stages. So a random person, we actually put a separate definition of guest, really doesn't have a clue what's going on. When he comes to the temple for some reason or other, out of curiosity, and he's what we put in blue is something that the person can do for themselves, and green is something that they should receive from others for responsible members of the temple. So they should be encouraged to cultivate an inquisitive spirit. They should receive knowledge about life's goal from other devotees. They should take instructions, accept the instructions. And in their own life, they should try to develop a distaste for material enjoyment and increase their desire for spiritual life. And try to understand Bhagavad Gita, but in association especially with the help of the devotee. And then if they decide to embark upon the path and become Nishtha devotee, then they should also remain inquisitive and be eager to hear and to learn from other more experienced devotees. They should also cultivate a pessimism towards material life and optimism about spiritual life. They should accept the shelter of the Guru. They should be looking for that shelter. And accept, be willing to accept austerity, to give up something they don't like to give up. And accept some practices that may be difficult in the beginning, but understanding that it's the purpose of bringing the mind and the senses under control. And then they should be taught, they should cultivate knowledge. This was in text 5. How to distinguish between different models of devotees. And then they should also continue with a guided study of the Shastra, bringing questions to distinguish the devotees. One of the other things they can do are develop strong faith in the chanting and in Krishna Prasadam by giving them other practices and applying their faith to these and follow. Cultivate a strict following of the very principles. This will help them progress to Uttamadhikara. He doesn't give up the practice of hearing and chanting. As we heard today, it becomes very much direction from the super soul how to advance. So his guidance comes from within. These are some of our thoughts that we gathered.
Thank you. So the process of advancement we see depends on association. Coming to the level of receiving initiation and then becoming serious in following. And Srila Prabhupada indicates there is the chanting of Hare Krishna that elevates us, and there is the practice of austerity, sama, dama, tapa, shaucham. This is what will actually qualify one for advancement. We should control the mind, control the senses, and perform austerities like getting up early in the morning and following all the instructions of the spiritual master. And shaucham, a refrain from sex life. So these four things are there for the spiritual advancement to bring one to the level of actually being situated properly in Krishna consciousness. And then there is hearing, more chanting, more association of devotees. And this is how the advancement takes place. So we can understand that all these instructions about association of devotees is very important. Srila Prabhupada also mentioned in the purport, prasadam, very important for the advancement. To be very strict with prasadam, that as soon as somebody takes prasadam, then the spiritual energy becomes active within him. So the neophyte should take as much prasadam as possible, should just stuff himself with prasadam. And as we grow in years in Krishna consciousness, then we continue to take prasadam, only prasadam, nothing else. And this influences our advancement. It is a practice, it is an austerity. Only prasadam. And then we have to work on the consciousness while taking prasadam. Honor prasadam. So there are different grades of practices that lead us higher and higher in Krishna consciousness. I hope you are understanding that this book, Upadeshamrita, is a jewel. It's giving us so many wonderful instructions. And even if we have heard them before, it is making it like, as Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is a science. What is a science?
You can see the result.
Yeah, it is verifiable. There's a process, and you apply the process, and zoo, it works. It explodes. Certain chemicals, you put them together, and boom, there is an explosion. You do it again, boom, there is an explosion. Every time you mix them, boom, there is an explosion. So if we do this thing, there will be spiritual advancement. And if we neglect these things, then there will be spiritual stagnation. And worse than that, there may be degradation. We see so many times devotees come to Krishna consciousness, they even get initiated, and after some time, they are no more there. They're just not around. They're gone. They've gone back to where they came from. And what is the reason? Prabhupada says it's 50-50. What is the 50-50? 50%, it is their responsibility. They did not apply these principles properly. So that is 50%. And what is the other 50%? It's us, the faulty members of the Krishna consciousness movement, that discouraged them by mismanaging, by misbehaving, mistreating, by fighting, arguing. That they didn't survive that. They didn't survive. So it's 50-50. So therefore, number one, it is for our own personal spiritual progress, we must read this book again and again, and we must somehow apply ourselves to follow it. And we must, this is for our own advancement, and because our purpose is preaching, and it's not just preaching to the non-devotees, but we must also give good association to those who are in the movement, So therefore, we should really make an effort for two purposes. One is our personal progress, and next is we are responsible to give association to others. This movement was created to provide association, which means sat, good association. So it is the responsibility of each and every member to practice in order to give good association to others as well as to progress himself. So this is very beautiful, actually. Very, very beautiful. One more thing Srila Prabhupada says about Diksha, that we said it's not just a ceremony, it is a process. There is a continuous process by which one takes the association of the spiritual master through his instructions, practices those instructions, and therefore becomes purified, and gradually newer and newer realizations are coming. What is the qualification to take Diksha mentioned in this purport? We heard on another day one qualification was to have understood the nature of the material world. You remember? What is another qualification which is mentioned here? Yes? Okay, become interested, inquisitive, and there is something else? One more? Okay, it is in that sense you said practice all those austerities of body and mind. Something else is written there? Okay, that will come gradually, yes. Okay, this is connected to the first one. You understood the nature of the world, so you lose some interest. There's something else which is mentioned here, very important. One should be ready to practice. One should be ready to follow. That determination to follow should occur before initiation. That's why we in ISKCON there is a kind of a time factor that you don't take initiation immediately, right? People come and they have to practice at least 6 months to 1 year. Then they have to associate with the spiritual master. As per Shastra, it's actually for another year. So you have to, you know, take time. And then you have to come to the point that you're ready to follow. Otherwise, what is the use of this initiation? It is a joke on if one is not ready to follow. So that determination has to be there. Otherwise, the Diksha is not taking place. The Guru gives transcendental knowledge. The day we take Diksha, he gives the holy name. The holy name is Krishna. He gives Krishna. And he explains how to chant and how to behave and how to do everything. And from the side of the disciple, there has to be the willingness to follow. So this is a... Now we should see, all of us, when we cultivate new people, you know, they need a recommendation for initiation. So what we should look at? Are they following? We hear this so many times, here and there we go, we hear these bad reports that people are being initiated who are not following. How does this happen?
Sometimes we get excited. Someone wants to join, when we become initiated, so we get excited about this prospect and we think, I recommend them, at least I'm showing that I'm doing a good job.
Yes, sometimes we are the preacher, you know, is eager to bring so many souls at the feet of the Guru. But it's more for, because see Gurudev how much I'm preaching, you know, I'm doing so much preaching. But what about, actually, those who do not follow are a burden, a dangerous burden for the spiritual master, that can drag him down to his most elevated position. Even Srila Prabhupada, when he was very, very sick at some point, he said, no, it is not my karma, it's not Krishna's will, it's nothing like that. It's your nonsense. He's telling his disciples. It's your nonsense, because you are not following. So because you are not following, I am having trouble. Because the spiritual master is absorbing the karmas. And vikarma is very undigestible. So we must follow. And when we recommend people for initiation, we should be serious. Is this person following? We don't recommend somebody we don't know. We don't recommend somebody who's like, you know, lousy. They have to be situated in the regulative principles. Then we can recommend them. Something else is mentioned in this purport, which is that one should not take initiation for the wrong reason. That's another beauty that happens. What is taking initiation from the wrong reasons? We already talked about this once.
Fashion.
Wanting a position. Social pressure. Peer pressure. Force. Or just, close your eyes, sit in the fire yagya by chance. So no, the purpose should be correct. To take initiation means I want to advance on the path of Krishna consciousness. I want Krishna. That should be the purpose of taking initiation. In the end of the purport to mantra 5, there is some very strong statements by Srila Prabhupada.
It's just interesting thing about for the new devotee, I think that the mentorship outreach is important for the person to speak about the whole life. Because we are
mentorship, you say.
Not everywhere, but we have to put the strength inside. Yes.
Yeah, there has to be a system of mentorship so that someone is actually monitoring the person and is aware of where the person is at. Yes. Let us read what is written. In the last purport. In this verse, Sri Rupa Goswami advises the devotee to be intelligent enough, he's summarizing, to distinguish between the Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. The devotee should also know his own position and should not try to imitate a devotee situated on a higher platform. So what is the advice here? That this description of the three levels of devotee, it is not only for us to see who is who, it is also for us to see which one, on which platform am I. So two things. One should discriminate amongst others on which platform they are, in order to interact properly, respect them properly. And the next thing is, one should discriminate within oneself by hearing all these symptoms. Which one am I? Am I self-realized? Do I know my relationship with Krishna? I know you will not say yes because it's not to be revealed. But no, in general, I have never seen Krishna, so the top position is already not mine. Okay. So now you can try to figure between Kanishta and Madhyama, which one am I? And you read what is written here. One who follows very nicely everything that is written in this book is a Madhyama. One who follows very nicely everything in this book is a Madhyama. Who follows this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is a Madhyama. And the Uttama also follows all this plus is realized. So if I am lacking in any of this, I am not a Madhyama. I am a Kanishta. I may have been here for 20 years. That doesn't mean I am a Madhyama. I think we should pierce this balloon in our society. There's so many Madhyamas around. No, there are not so many. So, please study the Madhuri Kadambini to understand more these levels of advancement. Most of the society is made up of Kanishtas. But sometimes we also think that a Kanishta is a very low class, low devotee. But no. It is explained that within each category, there are another three divisions. There is a Kanishta Kanishta, there is a Madhyama Kanishta, there is the Uttama Kanishta, then there is a Kanishta Madhyama, there is a Madhyama Madhyama, there is Uttama Madhyama, and then there is the Kanishta Uttama, and there is the Madhyama Uttama, and there is the Uttama Uttama. Who is Uttama Uttama? That is Rupa Goswami. Prabhupada, they are in that category. Who can compare? They are seeing Krishna face to face all the time. So we have to pierce the bubble. The other day we had a question that if somebody has been practicing for already 1 year, 2 years, how can he be a neophyte? Of course he's a neophyte. He is a neophyte. And so we need to look at ourselves very scrutinizingly and understand on which platform we are before we start receiving obeisances. Because when you preach, this is what happens. Everywhere you go, even Bhakta Joe, not initiated, but speaks nicely, goes to give pravachan immediately, especially in countries where that culture is there, like in India, in Bangladesh, in Nepal, in places where this, and wherever there are Indians, which is all over the world by now. As soon as you give one class, immediately people offer obeisances. So now you should think, what am I supposed to do now when they offer obeisances? What I should do? What should I do? Pass it down. Yes, that's very good. Internally, you have to immediately pray, my dear Lord, please accept their obeisances. Very compulsory. Very compulsory. Pass it on immediately. Offer back whenever you have the opportunity. Sometimes you may not do when they are in an official circumstance. It will look very odd. You know, you've just received arti before the Bhagavad Katha, and now they offer you obeisances, then you offer obeisances back. It looks a little rasabas. But when you meet them personally, you should not keep the same mood. So we have to be very careful. As far as possible, we do offer back obeisances, unless we know ourselves on a very exalted platform. And even those who are on exalted platform, many times they also offer obeisances. So we should not be very eager to receive this prarati vihi, very, very tricky thing. What happens as soon as people pay obeisances to us?
Pride.
Lurking there in the heart, you know. Of course. No, not like this. And one way to know exactly who we are is always instructed, who are we? Usually we have a public self and a private self. So if you know don't know the temperature, you observe your private self. When you are alone with yourself, what do you do? Then you will know. This is my state. Then, without any association, this is where I am. And when I'm in with others, then I'm doing very good. But when I'm alone, this is how I'm doing. So therefore, beware of receiving obeisances left and right. Usually, as much as possible, at least mentally, we return the obeisances. And of course, we pass them on. So this is for us to evaluate others and ourselves. So here, there is a bit more that is said in this purport here. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose disappearance is today, has given some practical hints to the effect that an Uttamadhikari Vaishnava can be recognized by his ability to convert many fallen souls to Vaishnavism. One should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttamadhikari. A neophyte Vaishnava or a Vaishnava situated on the intermediate platform can also accept disciples, but such disciples must be on the same platform. And it should be understood that they cannot advance very well towards the ultimate goal of life under his insufficient guidance. Therefore, a disciple should be careful to accept an Uttama Adhikari as a spiritual master. So this is a very heavy message which is given here at the end of the purport. There are different ways to understand it. And one way to understand it is to take it as a principle. It's a principle. What is the principle? In principle, the spiritual master should be an Uttama Adhikari. Therefore, one should strive to find the most advanced person one can find. Okay. It's a principle. When it says one should not become a spiritual master unless he has attained the platform of Uttama Adhikari, in some ways, an Uttama Adhikari never thinks of himself as an Uttama Adhikari. So it's a little tricky. It's not exactly an instruction to someone, say, you should not become a spiritual master as long as you have not become an Uttama Adhikari. But usually, one never thinks oneself as an Uttama Adhikari. Srila Prabhupada himself said amazing things, such as, I hope, just as Dhruva Maharaj remembered his mother, his instructing spiritual master, and took her to the spiritual world, I hope that one of you will remember me and thus take me back home, back to Godhead. This is how he saw. And it is not like a sickly access of some kind of humility on a good day. This is how he thought. Or when he was preaching, I think it was in France, that he was preaching to very rebellious French people, you know, revolution. And the revolutionary French spirit, Prabhupada was lecturing, there are four varnas and four ashrams, and there are the brahmanas, and there are the kshatriyas, and the vaishyas, and the shudras, and he explains everything. The brahmana is the head of the society, and he has these qualities, then the kshatriya is like this, and then there are the shudras. So here comes the French guy. So I understand that there are four classes of men. Prabhupada says, yes. Which one are you? The man asked. Because in France they don't like this kind of class system, this kind of idea. That's some, because the motto of the French is liberty, equality, and fraternity also. It means we are all same. What is these four classes? Which class are you? Very challengingly he was asking. And Srila Prabhupada said, looking down, this is in some of the memories of his disciple, Prabhupada, looking down with tears in his eyes, says, I am fifth class because I serve the other four classes. Actually, if you want to see from the transcendental eye, he's the Paramahamsa. He's beyond these four classes. The Paramahamsa serves the four classes, but Prabhupada is not sees that I am above these four, therefore I serve this. No, I'm below. I'm the fifth, because I serve them all. So the Uttama Adhikari, so it's not like this, that somebody will say, now I am an Uttama Adhikari, according to the Upanishamrita, please take the decision from me. Tamarikari will not do like that. But Prabhupada gives a principle that the topmost spiritual master is a realized person. It's a principle. One may take initiation, however, from any of the three kinds. You can take initiation from a Kanishtha. You can take initiation from a Madhyama. And you can take initiation from an Uttama. What is the difference?
Level.
It is the quality of the guidance. The quality of the guidance is different. The quality of the guidance is different. It does not mean that the disciple will not advance, because Srila Prabhupada also explained that sometimes the disciple advances more than the guru by following and by getting the mercy of Krishna by his service attitude, by his guru nishtha, by his service attitude, by his strict following. He may become more advanced than the guru. So it does not prohibit. And also, sometimes a madhyama adhikari or a kanishtha, but usually a madhyama, is requested by the uttama spiritual master to take on the service of giving initiations. He must accept what is the good thing with taking initiation from a madhyama adhikari is that he is progressing. One day he will be an uttama. By the time the disciple grow, he will also have grown. And if it works like this, you have not lost anything. Because what kind of guidance do you need anyway when you just came from the street? So you should have this faith in the spiritual master. As you grow, he's also growing. By the time you need some very intricate, or what do you say, deep, as they say, instructions, he will be ready. Or Krishna will give it to you. So, but these are principles. In principle, the Uttama Adhikari sees right through to the soul. His words are so powerful. They cleanse the heart in 1 second. So, okay. So let's take it as a this is the facts that Prabhupada is stating. And yes, one question, Pava.
Here in the last couple of events in the program, has it devoted that Srila Prabhupada gave the hints how to recognize the
Prabhupada? Yeah.
By his ability.
Yeah.
And then he's telling that he's following that the disciple should be careful because of the time. But before that, we thought that we should not be accepting the rule based on the fact that he was able to be
meaning, this is not the only symptom. Because there are people who make many followers because they don't ask any commitment from their followers. You know, there are big, big gurus in India. They don't give any regulative principles. They have hundreds of thousands of disciples. They give a lecture. At the end of the lecture, they say, okay, initiation. Thousands of people come forward and they take initiation. There is nothing to follow. It's easy. You understand? So, you have to see the seriousness of the followers as well. He has many disciples and they are very much, you know, advancing, and they are very serious in devotional service. And as we heard before, making many followers is not the only symptom. Along with this, what is there? Vacho vegam, manasa krodha vegam, jiva vegam, udaropasta vegam, etan vegam, yo vishahet dhira, is a dhira. And then you see the next, he accepts what is favorable, he rejects what is unfavorable. So you have to see all these symptoms. Plus, wow, his influence is very powerful. But those who have many disciples who are following nothing, what influence is that? It's called charisma. Charisma means there is something in there, it is due to pious activities. There is something in their personality that attracts people. And usually it's something like either they speak nicely, they make all kinds of jokes. Sometimes they are learned also. They can also be learned, you know. But the character is not there. Okay? No. No. Another question? Yes. in the beginning that Prabhupada also said one who has received first initiation, he has received a Harinam initiation. Spiritual initiation in this case here seems to mean second initiation. That's
actually,
one. Well, according to Srila Prabhupada, the first initiation, we are initiated at the first initiation, but okay, just a few minutes to explain the technical parts of it, that actually initiation, as you said, is a process, and it's also, it has different components, okay? The first component, and we receive in ISKCON these components in two installations. Before Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, this initiation was given in one go. But the times were different. The people were not fallen like in this age. In this age we are fallen. We cannot take the entire initiation in one go. We are not ready, you know. So, therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati split it into two. There is first initiation, which we call Harinam initiation, and there is second initiation, which we call Brahman initiation. Actually, it is one initiation only. The first part, when we take Harinam initiation, what we receive on that day, we receive three components, and plus one, which is the main one. But it's there are, as we said, we follow two marks. You remember two marks? Which mark? Pancharatriki and Bhagavatriki. So this Diksha is Pancharatriki Diksha. And Harinam Diksha is some of the Pancharatriki plus the Bhagavat. You receive the holy name. The holy name is not something that is given by Pancharatriki Diksha. It is given. This is from the Bhagavat Marg. The six Goswamis were initiated on the Bhagavat Marg. So, but what do we receive otherwise besides the chanting of Hare Krishna, the holy name itself, at initiation? Number one, we receive tilak. An initiated devotee is bound to wear tilak. Prabhupada said, always wear tilak. Even when you wear karmic clothes, the tilak has to be there. It's part of the initiation. Of course, we know for preaching sometimes we will not wear the tilak. So in those cases, it is said, at least water tilak. You put tilak with water. So with the mantras. So it is not visible, but it is there. So the tilak you receive. And it is not just a sign. It is a sign, yes. It is a symbol. What does it mean, the tilak? Going up. It's called urdhva punra. Accepting the tilak means I accept the path upwards. This is what it means. I accept, I surrender to spiritual life. I accept the path of elevation. This is the end of the material life. You accept the path of elevation. You are going, what do they say? That the suris are always looking at the lotus feet of Vishnu. What is that verse? Om Tat Vishnu Paramam Padam. Sada Pashyanti Surayaha. The Suras, they are always looking at the lotus feet of Vishnu. This is the Urdhva Punra. You accept the goal. Then we accept the dog collar. We accept the Kanti Mala. And this Kanti Mala, the Urdhva Punra is common to all the Vaishnava Sampradayas. They all wear some kind of tilak going upward. The Shaivite, they accept tilak that goes across the forehead. Means we stay here. And so Urdhva Punra, then you accept this. This is different. This is the sign that we renounce sinful life. This is the four regulative principles. the sign we are following the four Ayurvedic principles. So it is different from Sampradaya to Sampradaya. When you go to the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they are accepting the signs of Narayan printed in the skin with hot iron. They are Shankha, Gada, Padma, Chakra. Small. At the end of a piece of iron, they put it in the fire, becomes hot. On the arms, you receive these signs. But Mahaprabhu, very merciful, he gave us Kanti Mala. So actually, technically speaking, we should not distribute the Kanti Mala like a paraphernalia item to just sell to all these anybody who comes to the temple. This is the sign of following the regulative principles. It means no more sense gratification. We restrain with practicing tapaha, tapasya. We are refraining from sense gratification. That's what it is. Sometimes we say nothing goes down here. No meat, no fish, no eggs, like that. No wine, no tea, nothing. It's not going down. Finished. So that is the tilak we receive, the kanti mala we receive, and what else we receive? As we said, nama. We receive nama. But this nama does not refer exactly to Hari Nama. It refers to Mama Nama Prashantaha Devidasi. It's the initiation name. You receive your name. What does it mean that we receive a name? What is this? Dasa. Yes. It means I become a servant of Krishna. Govinda Dasa, Radha, Dasi. I become a servant of Krishna. This is actually the acceptance. This is the end of my false ego. I become a servant of Krishna. This is initiation. I choose the path upwards. I am fixed on the transcendental destination. I renounce sense gratification. I become dasanudas, a servant. This is the beginning of our transcendental swarup. Yay! To be realized. Okay. So these are the three items we receive. And besides the dasa, the Krishna nama that we get, we also get the holy name. Because what does a servant of Krishna do? He chants Hare Krishna. We chant the name of the master. We call him. But this is also part of the Bhagavat Mark. We receive the Harinam. Technically speaking, Harinam is sufficient for liberating the spirit soul. But this works only if the spiritual soul is already kind of awake. But for us, it is not enough. We need the Pancharatriki Vidhi. We need that. We need the purification through the Pancharatriki Vidhi. The Harinam works on the transcendentalists who don't have any sin. They don't have to wear Kanti Mala. They don't have any sins. And then the Brahminical initiation, you get another two items, which is mantra. And this does not refer to the Hare Krishna mantra because we already have it in the first initiation. It refers to Gayatri. We receive the Gayatri mantra, which is typically Pancharatriki. So we receive the Gayatri mantra to chant, to purify the mind, to continue and increase the purification. Why we don't receive the Gayatri on the first initiation when we get initiated? It happens to some people. I think it happened to Bhakti Charuswami. But usually the Guru does not give the Gayatri mantra to the first initiate. Why?
He's not pure.
He's not pure. What does it mean? He's not a Brahmin. Pancharatriki is the path of the Brahmanas, which means goodness. When we just had first initiation, we are full of passion and ignorance. We are just new devotees. To chant Gayatri requires the goodness. It is a meditation through the mind. It's not a mantra, it's a secret mantra. You don't chant it loud like the Hare Krishna mantra. It is chanted in the mind. So you have to meditate. You have to hear the mantra. When we just take initiation, we're not capable of this. We cannot do it. What to speak of the last item, which is called Ija. Ija means puja, worship. We are trained in deity worship. This is the fifth item. You receive training in the deity worship, in the worship of the deity. Srila Prabhupada wanted that all the devotees are engaged in the worship of the deity. This plus the Harinam, these two paths together, they surely will bring about success. So this is the story of the initiation. So therefore it is said also, same thing, when we recommend somebody for Brahminical initiation, you should see, is the person in goodness? Is the sadhana, what is the signs of goodness? First is regulation. Is the sadhana regulated? What is the sign of goodness? Is knowledge. Does he know anything? Does he have any knowledge? Is he reading? Is he studying? If he's going to be a brahmana, he has to study. Or is he regulated enough to worship the deity? To worship the deity is not something easy. You have to plan when you eat, when you sleep, when you pass, everything. Otherwise it doesn't work. So it requires advancement. So that's why here two initiations are mentioned. So you understand by this that the one who is brahminically initiated, if it has been done properly, is advanced already. Therefore, pranam. Not that automatically, Prabhu, I have been here for 1 year, please give me my brahminical initiation. Because I have been here for 1 year. After 1 year, I take my first initiation. After another year, I take brahminical initiation. No. Everything should go by symptoms. Some people take 20 years to become brahmins. It depends where we start from. And it depends how eager we are to progress. It depends on the previous sanskaras are there. Some people, after 20 years, they still cannot be steady in anything. And some people, within 1 year, that's it, they're already on the track. So, we have to see one thing that Rupa Goswami is teaching us in this book is to look at the symptoms. You see the symptoms in yourself, in others. Yes, it is. Upamsharatriki Vidhi. We take the Gayatri initiation, yes. Although there is one mantra in the beginning which is also Vedika mantra, Om Bhuva Swaha, that everybody knows. That is also part of the Vedika. Before the small boys were initiated, they would receive that mantra. But Prabhupada is very merciful, give it to everyone. Let us look at verse 6.
Is there any way you can help someone realize their position when they're new, and especially, you know, when the person is still there, especially if they've had a high material position?
How to help newcomers, especially those who come from a high material position, to realize what is their status in Krishna consciousness? Well, I think the main thing is to train them in, let them study, make them study, so they if they are sincere, they will realize. Train them to chant properly, that will bring humility. If you are a smart trainer, you put them into some certain circumstances where they will react on the neophyte platform, and then you can show them, they see, it's like that. So you have to be a little expert. For those who are proud, advancement is very slow. Those who are proud, it's the fifth sinful activity. For those who are proud, advancement is very slow. Because they commit offense. They don't feel the need to learn because they know already. cannot respect anybody. So their advancement is very slow. Because advancement means amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. You have to give respect. And you should not be eager to receive respect. This is what makes one advance. So if we don't have this, then there is no advancement. You see, this in number 2 verse of this Shikshastaka, it says, I have no taste for chanting the holy name, but it is my durbhagya, you know, it is my misfortune. And then the recipe is given in the next verse, number 3, how to finish this misfortune. What is the recipe? Trinadapi sunichena tarorivasahishma amanina maladeva kirtaniya sadahari. This is the recipe. Take it. Start cooking. It's a recipe. So those who are proud, they don't know this recipe. So it will take many years. Let us go to 6. Let us see. Can you ask later? Otherwise we will never do this 6 here. Let us sing together. Drishte svabhava janitera vabhushascha doshe na prakritattvamiha bhakta janasya pashye gangam hasam nakharu gurpunate na pankai brahma davatvam kagashati nirharmaini. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position, a pure devotee does not identify with the body. What are we talking about here in the verse? Pure devotee. So we had the description of 3 levels of devotees, and now, and Prabhupada said you should take initiation from the topmost one. So now this verse number 6 is talking about that one. In one sense, it's talking about all the devotees, because Prabhupada said all are pure devotees. How are all the devotees pure devotees?
They are progressing.
They are following the pure devotee. Because we are following the pure devotee, then we are pure devotees. Because we are adepts of pure bhakti, but we are cultivating. We are not there yet. But because we are following the path of pure bhakti, we are pure devotees. Because we are following the pure devotee, spiritual master, we are pure devotees. But technically we are not really pure devotees. Technically the Kanishtha and Madhyam are not really pure devotees. The only pure devotee is the Uttama, who is free from envy, who is free from greed, who is controlling all the Vegas. His heart has become thoroughly cleansed. He is really a pure devotee, 100%. We are apprentices, pure devotees. So, now we are talking of the pure devotee who becomes a spiritual master. It's also a verse about the spiritual master. How to view the spiritual master. Because out of all the relationships we have, the relationship with the spiritual master is the most prominent and important. So we should know how to relate. So some characteristics here. Being situated in his original Krishna conscious position. What is this? Swarupa. Yes, the Uttama devotee is fully identified with his spiritual identity. This also means that on the external platform he is 100% engaged in Krishna's service. He is not working a job part-time. He is not going to the pizzeria on Saturday. I was hearing a class where it was saying that what does the Pope do on Sundays after the Mass? Someone was saying, they were talking about some Pope, that what was he doing? He was doing some kind of, some sport or something. So, in general, one who is on that level of advancement, he doesn't need to relax. What did Prabhupada say about Krishna consciousness? It is a recreation. Yeah. It is permanent holiday. That's how Prabhupada defined Krishna consciousness. It's a permanent holiday. It's not that you have to take a break and do something else. No. Even when devotees take a break, it's not that they leave their japa mala at home and they take a break. It's not like this. Usually when they take a break, it is to intensify some aspects of their Krishna consciousness, not to do something else. So the spiritual master, he being situated in his original position, inwardly in meditation on Krishna's eternal lila, outwardly fully engaged in Krishna's seva, he does not identify with the body. He does not identify. He has transcended the material body. He does not identify with the body. We could see this in Srila Prabhupada. One example of this was very salient, is when he was traveling. Anyone who travels from one continent to the other experiences something called jet lag. Which means, because, you know, it's modern time, you travel by plane and you change the timing. Like, suppose it's 10 o'clock here, you know, in India, and then suddenly you land on another continent and it's not the same time. It's 10 o'clock here, you travel for 8 hours or 10 hours or 12 hours, meaning when you reach it should be 10 o'clock at night. But it's not 10 o'clock at night. It's depending which way you go, it's either earlier or later. But we have an internal clock which measures the time. So for us, things go by 24 hours. So it's very disturbing when you go long distance like this. You reach on the other side, everybody is awake and you are asleep. You know? Everybody is hungry, you are not hungry. Because your body is functioning according to your internal clock. So generally people can take up to 1 week to adjust. Then you adjust and you start sleeping when the sun goes down, and you start waking up when the sun goes up, like that. Prabhupada had no trace of this jet lag business. Wherever he would land, he would immediately adjust the clock, and because he was following a very strict schedule, he would immediately start from that point. 7 o'clock morning walk, 11 o'clock my massage, 4 o'clock bring the guests, you know, 10 o'clock at night we go to bed. He had no trace of this jet lag. What does it mean? It's not artificial. He was not sleeping also, like the Goswamis. Everybody goes to sleep. Prabhupada also, by 10 o'clock or something, they would massage him and he would go to sleep. Everybody would sleep for good, not him. By 12, 1 o'clock, he was fully awake. And what was he doing in the night? Writing, dictating his books. Was he tired by 4, 5 o'clock? No, he was ready to take bath. Very fresh. Would go on the morning walk, then give the Bhagavatam class, spend the whole day awake, little nap in the afternoon, ever fresh, Navayovana. Not affected. Here when it says not identify with the body, means not affected by the bodily functions. Because we also can say, I am not this body, Prabhu, I've read it in the Bhagavad Gita, I'm not this body. Sometimes we say like this when we are mistreated, you are this body, but no, I'm not this body. You are not this body, but you get jet lag, don't you do? Also then you are this body. So not affected. Such a devotee should not be seen from a materialistic point of view. So obviously such an advanced devotee is not on the material platform. He is on the transcendental platform. He has transcended. His consciousness is nirguna. It is beyond the three modes of material nature. So now what is this verse about? This verse is advising us how to see this devotee. How to see him. So there is a negative injunction. He should not be seen on the material from a materialistic point of view. What could be the materialistic point of view? That is described after that. What is the materialistic point of view? Well, one should overlook a devotee having a body born in a low family. From the mature born point of view, somebody is a high class family born there, somebody is born in a low class family. This is a material difference. Okay. The spiritual master of the advanced devotee, meaning this is a very hopeful verse that explains that anyone from any condition of life, even the lowest condition of life, can become an Uttamadhika. This is what it means. And once he has become an Uttamadhikari, you don't remind him that you were born Rikshawala. I don't mean Rikshawala low class, but compared to some others, you know, you don't remind. You don't remember this. It is no longer, appropriate, or it is not, it doesn't apply anymore. So what is the first fault we could see? In other words, you should beware of finding material faults in the spiritual master or the advanced devotee. First one, he's born in a low class family. Next fault, he has a body with a bad complexion. What is bad complexion usually is understood well? Either dark, because Prabhupada explained that from fair to dark in the human beings, fair complexion means usually it's a reflection of pious activity. Pious activities will produce more Brahmin type. Brahmins are more fair. And then if the complexion is darker, that indicates a sinful background. Okay. Or it could be something. Bad complexion is also skin disease. Somebody has a very skin disease. So this thing, something to do with the color of the skin, the way the skin is. So in other words, these are taken in Shastra, these are reactions for sinful activities. And then a deformed body, deformed build, abnormal body. You know, like you see sometimes those who get this polio, they have one leg that doesn't follow the other, you know, or the spinal cord is distorted, or the face is very strange, or they are paralyzed from one side, or there can be so many deformities in the world, horrible things. Somebody has no nose, or somebody has ears big like this, or somebody has no neck, or somebody. So many deformities are there. It's not a normal body. So again, what is the background of this? It is sinful activity, which produces a body which is incomplete, imperfect. In other words, a body which gives trouble. It gives trouble. Then there is what? Disease. Diseased or infirm. Infirm means like this paralysis or something. Like in our movement, we have one sannyasi with only one leg. So you would say, wow, he lost his leg. What a bad karma. You should not think like this. So the warning is there of disease. The spiritual master is diseased. There is some disease. So, according to ordinary vision, so this is ordinary vision, such imperfections may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee. Why? Because we said before that anyone, even if born in the most sinful condition, if he takes up the process of Krishna consciousness and is helped by a pure devotee, he can come out of any conditioning and rise to the platform of a liberated soul. And once he is there, he is no more a sinner. Why? Because the sins have been burnt. You will study this in details, more details. This is very summarized presentation, Nectar of Instruction. In the Nectar of Devotion, there is much more explanation of how the sins are manifested at different levels, in the form of seed, in the form of propensity, activity, reaction. These are reactions to sin. This one is here. And these are called technically prarabdha karma. Prarabdha. There is aprarabdha and prarabdha karma. Aprarabdha karma means some sinful reactions which are not manifested yet. They are inside, in the subtle body, but they are not manifested, so nobody knows. Even we don't know. It's inside, aprarabdha. It is not manifested. We have committed sins, and the reactions are inside. They are not manifested yet. And prarabdha means that right now, the reactions have already come into action. And because of this, there can be bodily defects, there can be mental defects, there can be poverty, there can be illiteracy or lack of intelligence. What are the signs of piety? Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shri. To be born in a good family, high-class family, this is the fruit of pious activity. Opposite of being born in a low-class family. And Aishwarya, some opulence, some property, some Lakshmi, some funds. This is sign of previous good activities. And Shruta, Shruta means intelligence, education. These are signs of good, very good, pious activity. And Shri, what is Shri? Beauty. And also health. Health and beauty, that is Shri. So these things are manifestation of good karmas, while the opposite are usually manifestations of bad karmas. So it is called prarabdha. When you see someone rich, he has already gotten the fruit of his pious activity. You see somebody with a deformed body, he is right now going through the reaction of his past activities. This is called prarabdha. But for a pure devotee, the process of bhakti has been practiced so intensely and Krishna has bestowed so much mercy that the aprarabdha has been destroyed. Inside is fully clean. And the prarabdha, which is visible in the body, it cannot be removed. You cannot grow the leg back. You cannot change if you have polio. This, by chanting Hare Krishna, will not get rectified. So the prarabdha, it cannot go, but it is actually not a disqualification anymore. It is no longer the proof that you are sinful. It is not a disqualification. It actually has been destroyed. But the form, the visible form is still there. But the sin is no longer there. The sin that has created that situation has been destroyed. So a pure devotee is completely pure. No matter what body he is in, you can never say that this body is a proof of sin. No. Because everything has been cleansed. And the prarabdha, which still you can see some, it is visible, but it is actually not existing anymore. It has also been destroyed. So it is visible only with material eyes. If you have spiritual eyes, then you overlook this prarabdha, which actually is not there. But the prarabdha actually, it cannot be, the visible part of it cannot be taken. taken away. It will stay till the end of life. However, it is not actually there, and therefore it is not a disqualification. It is very important to understand this. You should understand that the Krishna consciousness movement can only flourish in the world if we understand these principles. Otherwise, we will always make differences between the devotees. But this one is black, is a sinner. This one is, you know, rich, is a pious man. No. Once you take up the path of deity, Krishna consciousness, when there is significant advancement, all this is being swept away. And the person is to be respected for what they are now, in the present, not for what they were in the past. So here, he is saying, may seem prominent in the body of a pure devotee, but despite such seeming defects, the body of a pure devotee cannot be polluted. It is clean. It is not polluted by sin. It has become pure. Somewhere in the purport, Prabhupada said it is a spiritual body. It has been spiritualized. It is not made of karma, especially not of bad karma. It is sustained by Krishna. It is exactly, now he's giving a comparison, it is exactly like the waters of the Ganges, which sometimes, during the rainy season, are full of bubbles, foam, and mud. Rajas, tamas, sattva. There are foams, there are bubbles, foam, mud. This is the contamination of the three modes of material nature. The Ganges water does not become polluted. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding will bathe in the Ganges without considering the condition of the water. Those who take bath in the Yamuna here in Vrindavan, they meditate on this. Sometimes the water comes down very much, and all the sewage of the city is very thoughtlessly being driven to the Yamuna. There have been times in the past when you go to take bath, it actually stinks. But still, the Brijbasis every day take bath in the Yamuna. Why? They do not have material vision. Yamuna, Devi, divine. It is divine. So, and similarly, I remember one of the first times I was taking bath in Varanasi. I was a new person. I went and see everybody is taking bath in the river. So I also go. And I observe how they are doing. You know, I was 20 years old. So for a few days I was observing how they do. Then I understood this is how you do it. So I went and I prepare and I do very nice. I take my gamsa, this, that, my dress, my clothes, everything. I study very nicely. Then I go, I do a little pranam because I saw they are doing like this. And then you go inside the water. And as I enter inside the water, one dead body floating. One dead body was floating down the river. I go, oh, should I stay in the water or go out of the water? Should I do like them, you know, you go under the water and come out? Okay, let's not be baby dead. See, nobody seems to mind. So this is what happens in the sacred rivers. However, does this pollute the river? No. The river is never polluted. Even physically speaking, in Mayapur, devotees drink which water? Ganga water. In Mayapur, we drink Ganga water. But the Ganga water in Mayapur has gone through Kanpur, Allahabad, Banaras, all the different places, that have downloaded all the toilet of all the millions of inhabitants of all the cities. They have entered the water. And still when you are in Calcutta, not just Mayapur, in Calcutta, you drink the water. It is ever pure. Some people have analyzed that actually it is extraordinary that it is true that it is pure. Of course, they have found some material explanation of this and that, some specific kind of stones that produce some kind of something that destroys all the bacteria, something like that. So this is an example which is given here, that the devotee, because he is beyond the modes of material nature, he acts on the spiritual platform all the time, and therefore we should not see him from a materialistic point of view. This would be wrong. Not only it is wrong, but it is also offensive. This purport is about offense. It is offensive. So there are four kinds of reasons why we could criticize a devotee. I think this is given in Harinam Chintamani. What is this? It has been given here. Birth. We can criticize someone because of his birth, low class birth. Okay. So we criticize. Sometimes, you know, there are beautiful sayings in English, son of a, you know. So this is son of a. Right. So you criticize because of a birth. And then sins committed before being a Vaishnava. Before you become a devotee, especially in the age of Kali, most of the people are addicted to four sinful activities, or at least one. Before becoming a devotee, the person who is now a devotee, and especially an advanced devotee, he was addicted to something. Either he was taking intoxicant, or having illicit relationships, or he was eating meat, or he was an addicted gambler. But after becoming a devotee, Kantimala, Charaniya, four regulative principles, no more doing. When the sinful activities were going on, that person was in ignorance. But after hearing, it is said, it is not making a mistake which is a mistake. What is a mistake? Is not rectifying oneself. That is a mistake. To make a mistake, it's a mistake. But to not rectify and continue to make the mistake, especially after hearing, that is a real mistake. So therefore, we cannot criticize the devotee, because before being a devotee, I found out that my Gurudev was smoking pot. This is very offensive, because that is gone. That kind of life is dead and gone. And then there is unpremeditated sins. That sometimes a devotee, by the pullings of previous karmas, when the devotee is not yet fully purified, so there is some what is called accidental fall down. Accidentally somebody does something, you know, when somehow, somewhere to visit the family, and everybody was smoking cigarettes, and in the past he used to smoke cigarettes, so somehow or other it just happened, he smoked one cigarette. This is accidental. What is the opposite of accidental? Premeditated. And the person actually plans and thinks and plans. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, knowing very well that it's wrong, and counting on the chanting of Hare Krishna to nullify the reactions. That is called premeditated. But there is accidental. Okay, some mistake happened along the way. It's an accident. So we should not bash the devotee again and again and again. You remember you fell down? You know, every time they make a little summer, you remember you fell down? You remember you fell down? We cannot remind the people all the time, you fell down, you fell down, you fell down. He got up after that. So the important is get up and walk. Then there is traces of previous sinful activity. This is what was mentioned in the verse. You know, a deformed body and so on. These are traces of previous sinful activity. Some things that are apparent, bodily defects and so on. Okay? So, then what should be taken into account in the pure devotee? We should not look at these things to determine whether he is pure or impure. This doesn't determine whether he is pure or impure. It's only material vision. What should be taken into account?
His love and devotion.
His love and devotion. His surrender. The surrender of the pure devotee. How much the person is engaged in devotional service? The service. How much service the person is rendering. And Prabhupada says you should take into account the spiritual master's main business. So Prabhupada in the purport actually at some point making clear that this refers to the spiritual master, this verse, and our relationship with the spiritual master. So we should take into account the spiritual master's main business, which is devotional service, pure service to the Supreme Lord. And otherwise, there will be offense. What are various kinds of offenses? The Prabhupada said this is hati mata, the elephant offense, to offend the spiritual master. It will uproot the devotional kripa in our heart. Very bad. So what are different ways to offend the spiritual master that are mentioned in the purport? To advise him. Person, you know, thinking that he doesn't know, thinking oneself superior, it is an offense to advise the spiritual master. Or if the spiritual master asks our opinion, we must give. It's a service, it's his order. If he expects an advice, for example, you know, spiritual master doesn't know how to use computer, is that a defect? No. And he may ask a young devotee, disciple, can you please teach me, you know, something on the computer? Is his position diminished? No. He's just taking advice about something material. So, we should not advise the spiritual master. I remember when my Guru Maharaj, I served him for some years, and he had asked me something to give my opinion on something, and I concluded my opinion by saying, Maharaj, I recommend that you do this, this and that. So Maharaj was sitting on his seat and he said, you may suggest. That's your position. You can't recommend. You may suggest. What else is an offense?
To correct him.
To correct the spiritual master. So these are very deep matters here. Because sometimes the spiritual master also needs to be corrected in case the spiritual master goes astray. But in general, it is not the business of the disciple. The disciple can speak in confidence with someone else who can take care. Usually the way to discipline an Uttama Adhikari or a very advanced Madhyama Adhikari, it is done by peers. It has to be done by peers or by superiors. What are peers? Equals. It's not disciplined by a younger person. So, discipline happens by superiors or by equals. And then, criticize him, that we already studied. Trying to discipline the spiritual master This is very tricky because sometimes in our society we see that some of the spiritual masters are put for discipline. They are disciplined, but by whom? Not by their disciples. It is not the business of disciples to discipline a spiritual master. If there is something that has gone wrong, and let us not think that something goes wrong with the spiritual master is just something which happens in ISKCON. Let us not think that because many times some of the spiritual masters have not been able to actually live up to the commitment they had taken, that it means that no one can do it. This is called throwing the baby with the bath water. There's a saying in English, throwing the baby with the bath water. You have a tub, you put the baby in, and then, you clean the baby and everything, and then it looks like a mess. It's full of soap and all. So you just throw everything out. Now, you don't throw the baby with the bath water. So when you think, well, so many gurus fell down, therefore, no one should be a guru. Some people think like this. We hear it in our society. They all fall down. This is a generalization. Have they all fallen down? No, they have not all fallen down. Should you look at the ones who have fallen down or at the ones who remained? It's good to look at the ones who fell down as well, because you can learn lessons. But mostly you look at the ones who have survived. Why do you have to concentrate on all the ones that are gone? It is not something special to ISKCON. Even in the Shankara Parampara, sometimes there is a fall down and there are great, great, great Matajishas. So, in other sampradayas also. What is the proof of this? This has been existing always. What is the proof? That a whole process of rectification of the spiritual master is mentioned in the Shastra. This means it has been existing always. Srila Prabhupada says to become a preacher is a risk. It is taking a risk. If one somehow takes up the service too early, which has been the case of Prabhupada's followers, how old were they when they started initiating? Not for initiation, but they were, basically in their 20s or early 30s when they started initiating hundreds of devotees after Prabhupada left. So naturally, they sacrificed themselves. They sacrificed their life. You may say, oh, well, they were crooked. And maybe out of all of them, maybe one, maybe somebody was crooked, but not all of them. They followed Prabhupada's order. They sacrificed their lives. And it can always happen. It is happening. Every now and then you get it in the news. Some in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, in the Shankara Sampradaya, in the Madhva Sampradaya, I think recently last year there was something that happened. It happens everywhere. It is a dangerous path. It is an enormous service that people take up. If it is taken up too soon without the proper purification, there is risk of fall down. So, but this does not mean that we should give up the whole system. It does not mean that. It means we should be careful in selecting a spiritual master, number one. And number two, we should follow very rigidly, not to burden our spiritual master. What else is offensive for the spiritual master? It's a jealousy. To be jealous of the spiritual master. And there are many other things. Misuse his property. Enjoy his property. All these things are there. The jealousy is particularly mentioned in connection to the always this thing that there is between the Goswamis, so-called, who are born in Pakka, we say, like, in traditional Brahminical families, and the Goswamis that were made by Prabhupada from all over the world, from Melecha, Yavana, Chandar, they also got the Dharma. They became Goswamis. The first time Prabhupada came then to India, it was a big upheaval. You have ruined our culture, they told him. They did not recognize that these foreign people can actually become Goswamis. But according to this verse of Rupa Goswami, they can. They can because by the process of Diksha and the chanting of the holy name, any human being, even an animal, becomes purified. Any human being becomes purified and can be elevated gradually to the topmost, to the best. We heard. So this is the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. It is the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya, and with faith in this philosophy, we preach all over the world. Otherwise, what is the use of preaching if they cannot transform? They can transform. Everyone can transform. So sometimes there is jealousy between those who are born in good families and those who are born in lower families. This is all offense. Because when the person has dedicated their life to Krishna consciousness and preaching Krishna consciousness, such persons are not to be seen from the material point of view. Okay, so we will stop here. Everyone is born low class, but it's not exactly true. There are exceptions. There are people who are not born in this low class. Everyone is suffering, she says. There's no need of being jealous. That is true. It's useless to be jealous of others. Externally, sometimes people may look like they are beautiful, they are intelligent, they are rich, they were born in a good family. But what's wrong with them? You know, they are not devotees. Or they have all this, but still they are miserable one way or the other. Because there is no happiness in this world. Even for the one who is born in the best of families, who has the best of body, who is most intelligent, and who has wealth, even for such person, first thing is, he did suffer birth. At the time of birth, when the baby comes out of the womb, what does he do? He cries. Little bit? Very much. Why? Because birth is painful. And then disease, and then he grows teeth even before disease. You know, the child has to learn how to walk, how to eat, how many times the child falls, whether he is rich or poor, he falls the same. The teeth, they grow in the poor and in the rich also. And it's agonizing. When the teeth are growing, the babies are suffering, the children are suffering. Whether they are rich or poor, it doesn't matter. So it is true, those who have less money, they suffer more in some ways, because they can't go to the doctor or something. But otherwise everyone suffers. Rich man, but what is the most important to be happy in the world, even in the material point of view, what is the most important? It is relationships. So this beauty, wealth, everything does not give good relationships. So even the richest man, if he doesn't have good relationships around him, is a waste, is miserable. And if a poor man has love around him, he is happy, even if he is poor. So this is all illusion. The illusion. And somebody is beautiful, okay, so That's very enjoyable when he looks at himself in the mirror. Oh, wow. You know? But it attracts all kinds of catastrophe, being beautiful. From the sinful point of view, being beautiful is a curse, practically. Because all it will attract the lust of people. This is what it does. When you are beautiful, everybody is looking with lusty eyes and sending all these negative vibrations. So there is nothing. Prabhupada said there is only good in this world means Krishna consciousness. Pious, impious, this is. It's bad, it's very bad and bad. Good is only Krishna consciousness. When we become a devotee, that's good. Everything else, that's not. That is not. And when we say, you know, sometimes it is difficult to understand for ourselves, and it takes a lot to actually grow, to understand that I have a sinful quota. I have a sinful quota, you know. When we read these things, and when he speaks, for example, of fair skin, dark skin, so immediately all those who have a dark skin, they start thinking, oh. But, you know, recently I was visiting Africa. Well, for darkness, you go to Africa. You know, everybody's dark. Although I discovered that some are actually brown. There are different ethnics there. But everyone is dark. But it doesn't mean that they are all like super sinners, dark people. It's not like this. There are also wonderful people there. So, and sometimes a white man like Hitler, he's a demon. So, dark means yes, somewhere in the past there is something that has created that complexion, which is, according to Shastra, has something to do with sin. You know? But it doesn't always mean that it is manifested also with a sinful character in this life. You understand? It doesn't mean that it manifests a sinful character in this life. It manifests something that has happened in the past, something is there, so something has gone on. But sometimes somebody is rich, beautiful, everything, white, all that, and he's a sinner in this life. So which one you should choose as your friend? The black man or the white man? You have to see the color of the heart. So this is what we are learning in Upadeshamrita. That you see the color of the heart. Then only you can have, you are secure. Okay, we stop here. Questions tomorrow. We are going to the temple room. We are going to honor Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur by offering Pushpanjali. And then we'll have Kirtan. After quite some days, we'll have a Monday Kirtan in the temple room. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.